CFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire,
and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Stacey Lynn in Washington. Another racist shooting, this one at a Dollar General store in Jacksonville, Florida. Three people were killed. The gunman then shot himself.
Jacksonville Sheriff T.K. Waters says authorities know who he is.
The Office of the Medical Examiner has positively identified the shooter.
Sheriff Waters says he was 21 years old and was a legal gun owner.
They were 100% legal.
He left behind writings with racist ideology.
Quite frankly, the diary of a madman.
The three victims, all black, were 52, 19, and 29 years old. Linda Kenyon, CBS News.
One person is dead from fast-moving wildfires in Louisiana.
We have a massive firefight going on.
State Ag Commissioner Mike Strain says amid the hottest summer ever recorded in Louisiana and the resulting drought, fires are consuming thousands and thousands of acres.
We are now seeing entire towns being endangered.
He says some blazes are the results of people burning trash or crop fields, while others are from discarded cigarettes or intentional arson.
We could have major catastrophic loss.
Dave Cohen for CBS News, New Orleans.
Tropical storm Idalia is expected to strengthen into a hurricane in the Gulf of Mexico by Tuesday and then curve towards the west coast of Florida, making landfall Wednesday. The storm is also expected to bring heavy rain to Georgia and the Carolinas. Meanwhile, triple-digit temps are still scorching other parts of the country. Meteorologist David Parkinson.
Long Beach could get to 96 degrees. That would be a record. Phoenix breaking a record, likely getting to 114. And then along the Gulf Coast, we still have high heat, triple-digit temperatures for Beaumont, likely to be there for Baton Rouge as well.
The Trump campaign claims it's raised over $7 million since the former president's mugshot was released last week. Republican presidential candidate Chris Christie was asked about the donations on Face the Nation.
He's taking people who donate an average of $100 to him to try to get him to become president of the United States again, and he's using that money to pay his legal fees. It's immoral.
California's won the Little League World Series championship. Lewis Lappi hit a walk-off homer to beat Curacao 6-5 yesterday. Lappi's dad can't believe it.
You know, it's everything you dream of, right? And oh my God, it just happened. I mean, I don't know. I mean, pitch me. Is this a dream?
It's the eighth Little League championship title for California. NASA's SpaceX Crew 7 successfully docked at the International Space Station yesterday. The spacecraft named Endurance was launched from Kennedy Space Center in Florida Saturday. The astronauts will spend 6 months there. This is CBS News.
When you think of hiring, think of Indeed. Their end-to-end hiring system helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west-northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898, but 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Don't let biased algorithms or degree screens or exclusive professional networks or stereotypes. Don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
The RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News, today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station. As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
And apparently, Maggie Dawn, Fig Newton lover of the Maggie Dawn Show.
I was so offended, Jane. You know how much I love and admire you. You're like my freaking radio hero. And then to hear you bash my Newton.
It's still bad.
You want the cakey part cakey. You want the jammy part jammy. That is like bringing me back.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bry. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Technical difficulties happen and you just power through.
It gets glitchy. I think it indicates.
Indicative? Is that the word you were looking
for? That is a good word, Kristen Bry. Thank you.
Leakage can be a problem.
In many aspects leakage of life, yes.
It's kind of like, what did I say yesterday? Pus-filled lesion.
Oh, my favorite.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Wisconsin. Welcome to the 11 o'clock hour of As Goes Wisconsin. I am your host, Kristen Bry, along with Greg Bach on the board. Happy Friday. We are 1 hour until the weekend, which is very exciting. And for the next half hour, we are joined by CJ Safer, president of Institute for Reforming Government. It's been like 2 months since we've seen you. So what have you been up to, friend?
It's been too long. Happy Friday. How are you?
You know, recovering still. Wednesday was a big day. And it was, you know, I thought last night just vegging out and doing nothing would be enough. But apparently, I need more time. It's like being hungover when you're in your late 30s. You're like, oh, yeah, I need more than one day to recover.
That's why Guy created the weekend.
Exactly. did you have a big Wednesday? Did the IRG do much for the debate?
Yeah, it was, you know, so we're remote, so we don't actually have a presence in Milwaukee, but it was just a really good time. We had our team and some of our board of directors in. We did a dinner. We went to the debate, did some after parties. So yes, quite tired.
Quite tired. Well, I definitely want to get more of your, like, what you thought, what your colleagues thought. But before we do that, I wanted to hear more because you've been spending a lot of time up north and doing both. I mean, obviously, one of the times, I forgot how long ago it was when we came on and we talked about the massive report IRG did as far as like, what do Wisconsinites want? But even since that report, you've been up in Hayward and the surrounding areas talking to a lot of people. So I wanted to hear more about what those conversations have been like.
Look, Wisconsin is such a massive state. So, you know, we are geographically diverse. We're ethnically diverse when you just look from corner to corner of the entire state. So what IRG has been trying to do is we've been driving over 5,000 miles, visiting over 40 cities, just really just trying to learn and just listen to what are the challenges that Wisconsinites face and what are some of the potential solutions that we should be advocating for in state government. And one of the things we're really focusing on is we're focusing on Sawyer County, especially Hayward. So we've been going up there about once a month for like the last three, four months. We've been meeting with teachers, with school board members, with business leaders, with workers, just trying to get a handle of this really unique part of the state that so few people go there for tourism. But they don't really go there and understand what are the problems and the challenges. And in our travels there, it's just been absolutely just fascinating just to sit there. And we really haven't yet just pitched a whole lot of like solutions. We've just been just doing more listening than anything else. And geez, you really get a grasp of just how big of a state Wisconsin is. You know, driving constantly 5 hours to go to the northwest part of the state. I mean, Hayward is just an absolute gorgeous part of the state. And they're very blessed that they have tourism. They're very blessed that they have, you know, obviously there is wealth there. There's people that go there that have summer homes and they go there and they're going to spend money. But one thing is, like, when you look behind the curtain, this is what's fascinated us about Sawyer County and Hayward. When you look past that, right, past the lake homes, past like the supper clubs, and you actually look at the schools, the people that live there year round, the people that work there year round, you really do get a sense of, you know, this is kind of symbolic of rural Wisconsin and the challenges that rural Wisconsin has. So take K-12 education for a moment. Rural education, as anyone would tell you, is really hard. There's resources, there's transportation issues. But one thing, the biggest thing is when we had about, we've had almost 20 different discussions with people who are involved in K-12 education in Hayward. And the thing that comes up time and time again is just the challenges with families. You know, no one quote me on this, but the number that they were pushing to us was that almost one out of every two students comes from some sort of broken home. I think the number was probably closer to 40%, but just think about one out of every two or one out of every three students that has a broken home.
When, what do you define, like, what is the broken home defined as in that scenario?
Not a stable family structure. So sometimes they're being raised by sisters or by brothers or by grandparents. Parents are potentially incarcerated, or, you know, this stems to the other major issue we hear, which is drugs and opioids, but just, you know, issues with a lack of parenting, lack of parents being actually there. And when you really start to just kind of see that, so before the kid, before there's so many kids, before they even get into the classroom, they're dealing with major socioeconomic major issues at the house of just lack of just an actual, you know, stable family. And there's just a tremendous amount of issues that kind of ripple effect from that with mental health, with learning disabilities, food security when they leave like the building. And then you kind of just get a real appreciation of, my gosh, like, you know, that is such a stress on the school system that, you know, it is really hard to kind of even when you look at like test scores. And, you know, so one of the common things we hear is like, well, how should our school system even be evaluated, right? Because we deal with all these children with all these issues. And yet, you know, there's just some numbers that relate to standardized testing and it gets spit out from DPI in Madison. And we're labeled a successful or a struggling school based on test scores. Where's the appreciation for just, you know, the issues that we're dealing with on a day in, day out basis with just sheer issues pertaining to poverty and pertaining to just broken homes?
And that's so interesting because sometimes I'm interested in the things that, as much as there's a divide between like where you and I live, which is Southeast Wisconsin, and in this like most populous areas of the state, being Milwaukee, obviously being one of them. And sometimes, because like when you're talking about some of those issues, as far as how much students are dealing with at home before they even get to the classroom and how much that is leading to educational issues, it's the same thing in MPS. Right. Like we have so many. Right. We have so many students who are living under the poverty line, who are living in emotionally stressful situations, who are hungry, and then expect them to be able to thrive at school. And so do you feel like there's a commonality as far as what's like, despite being literally opposite sides of the state and one very urban, one very rural? Do you think like what's causing, like, there's more similarities as far as what's causing the family structure, like, similarities?
Oh, it hit me immediately. And there's so many commonalities, and obviously there's some major differences, right?
Yeah.
Not just racial, but think about the sheer fact that a little less so in Hayward compared to other districts in Sawyer County. But you're looking at some kids; they're on the bus for long periods yeah. of time. Still a very big district, still very rural and small town. But at the same time, you look at some of those similarities to MPS, and really it's one of the reasons why, not to tease something for later in the year, why IRG is actually investing resources for outreach into Milwaukee and into Sawyer counties, because we feel like opposite corners of the state, 5-hour drive away. But yet there's some things that there's some similarities, probably more that unites these regions than not. Just what the problems and how they look like are just a little bit different.
Yeah.
But geez, it was really heartbreaking to hear some of these stories. And then again, something similar with MPS, it's a little different, but teacher shortage. I mean, it's a huge issue across sector in Milwaukee. I know my colleague Quentin Claibon has been on the show and talked about it. But, you know, Milwaukee, doesn't matter if you're charter, private, or MPS, you have an issue with not just teacher quality, but just getting teachers. And it is a major issue when you even take a step back and say, you know, we need teachers in Hayward, or we need teachers in Sawyer County. So you're also saying, like, you know, we need to find teachers. We also have to find teachers that want to live in a really rural part of the state, and that by itself is going to limit the applicant pool.
And I think about that a lot. Like, I think about some of the young journalists, like broadcast journalists, who get sent to, like, when they're first starting out, and they get sent to Rhinelander. But it's like, for them, it's seen as like a stepping stone, right? Like, they get out of like J school, and they're like, all right, you have to go to this remote part of this state, and then you get, you know, your next job. But like for teachers, it's like you set roots up. It's not necessarily, you go to a place if you're an ambitious young teacher, because then you're going to go to this next place. It's like you are setting up a life, and you have to also want to be part of that community and want to be teaching in that community. And like for young, I mean, I think in general, we know that these stats show that most young people, when they get out of college, want to live in a place where there's not everyone, but trends want to live in a place that has some stuff going on. And not that, you know, I was in Hayward this summer. I got to go to the Lumberjack championship, world championship, which was very fun. I'm hoping to make it to the Birkenbeiner next year. So like you said, they have two massive events that drive a ton of people there. There is a lot of tourism, but it is a different scenario for people who live there year round. And recruiting teachers, do they have a plan for that? I guess I asked that question, and now we have to go to a break. So we'll follow up with that on the other side of the break. But then I also will close on that, and then I still want to hear your thoughts on the debate, because I don't know. I think you were there. If it felt different,
everyone's got to have takes.
All right, our guest is CJ Safer, who is the president for Institute for Reforming Government. Stick around, more As Goes Wisconsin when we're back.
Don't you ever ask them why? If they told you, you would cry. So just look at them and sigh. And know they love you.
Bug Tussle, providing high-speed internet to rural Wisconsin. No data caps, no contracts. 877-227-0924. Call today to learn how you can get 3 months free. 877-227-0924.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898, but 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, mostly clear, lows around 58. Slight chance of an afternoon storm on Monday, otherwise mostly sunny, 82. And slight chance of a storm Monday night with a low near 60. Tuesday, sunshine, 77. Wednesday, sunny with a high around 79.
It's 57 at our studios.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
Oh, yeah. That's right, baby. Girl, tonight we're gonna make love. You know how I know, baby? Because it's Wednesday. And Wednesday night is the night that we make love. Tuesday night's the night that we go and visit your mother.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry, along with Greg Bach on the phone, on the board. Is that a reference to something?
Absolutely not. I just, the other music was like not even close. So I gave it a shot. None of them all work. So.
Okay. Swinging. Good.
Swung for the fences.
What'd you hit?
My bat in the dirt.
And our guest for this segment, for the first half hour, is CJ Safer, president for Institute for Reforming Government. And just to wrap up our conversation, because you guys have spent a lot of time all across the state, but a lot of time up in Hayward and Sawyer County. And previously, in the last segment, we were talking about teacher retention, also just kind of where the education stands and the similarities and differences between the struggles that they're having up there as we're having in urban centers like Milwaukee. And so as far as listening a lot, but what are you thinking or where are you guys leaning as far as potential solutions?
Yeah, I mean, look, the challenges in Sawyer County, again, you just it's beautiful. It's an area that's so rich of just resources and honestly, really amazing people. A lot of grit and a lot of like determination, but at the same time, when you peel it back, you look at there's just immense socioeconomic problems with poverty, with education. We're going to be meeting with community leaders throughout the rest of this year, and then we'll be working with them to do some solutions late this year, early next year. Would love to talk with you about them. But one thing that really is glaring to us from an education side, whether it's looking at teaching, whether it's looking at evaluating schools, whether it's just looking at just like how we allocate resources. One thing we kept hearing from time and time again was just an almost like a disconnect between like, we are in Sawyer County. We're closer to, you know, Minnesota than anything else, but we're 5 hours north of Madison and not any sort of resentment towards state government, but almost like a, no one really comes up here,
mm-hmm.
you know, whether it's lawmakers, whether it's the Department of Public Instruction. So it's almost like more autonomy, more freedom, more of a just trying to get an appreciation of how have policies and laws and funding more suit their needs of what they're seeing it, and not as much of what's being, you know, dictated, for lack of a better term, to them from Madison.
It's so interesting that you said that because we Civic Media hosted a panel for national press that was in town for the debate on Wednesday, And, you know, in talking about political strategy, which was a lot of what we go into next year in 2024 and the debate and everything is, you know, so much gets centered on 10 counties, right? Madison, Dane County, the Wow counties, the Bow counties, and like that, like elections are won and lost there in this state. And we had a shout out to Beverly, a woman, a listener who was there, who lives in Richland Center. And she stood up and she said, you know, hearing you guys say this so point blank, we feel forgotten. And Richland Center is obviously much further south than Hayward, but it's still that western part of the state that doesn't get the attention because it is less people. And so it is like it's definitely a problem. So kudos to you guys for going up there and actually listening and bringing that to the forefront as far as some of the policy suggestions that, I mean, that you guys are, I'm assuming, going to start working on now. But before we go further on that topic, I do want to hear, because as I bring up the debate, from a conservative point of view, from IRG's point of view, or from your personal point of view, depending on how you want to frame it, what'd you think? Anything that you heard that you were impressed by, surprised by? Did any of it make a difference?
Oh, boy. How much time do we have?
You got 3 minutes. You got 3 minutes.
I don't like the term losers, but certainly there's winners, losers, however you want to do it. We can rapid fire back and forth. So I think Milwaukee was a clear winner, right? Like, okay. I don't know if you heard of anything, but it seemed like this largely went off without a hitch, despite it being 1,000 degrees. I mean, truly, it was one of the hottest days I've ever experienced.
Yeah.
And I saw everything was really well done. And honestly, probably a good appetizer for the convention next summer. So I think if you're the mayor, if you're anyone in Milwaukee, job well done. The flip side, though, where was the Milwaukee Wisconsin shout outs during the actual debate?
I was
kind of flabbergasted. It was like, we have it in Milwaukee and Wisconsin because we are a swing state, because all roads that go to the White House go through Wisconsin. And yet there was not a single tailor-made talking point in what was really 2 hours full of talking points. Nothing really tailor-made to Milwaukee or Wisconsin, despite there being, I thought, a ton of opportunities.
I thought the same thing. I was like, this feels, especially, and I couldn't tell if it was just because we had spent the whole day talking about Wisconsin, like in our world, and I'd heard and I'd learned so much. And so, yeah, to then hear like barely, it's like that they could have been anywhere, but there was absolutely no conversation around specific things in Wisconsin that people care about, or even like, hello, Wisconsin, like we start this show off every day.
I mean, we talked unions and school choice during the debate, and nothing, and there was no mention of Scott Walker, Governor Walker, who was in the front row. And you would thought with the it could have been loud and boisterous. Look, I thought Nikki Haley did overwhelmingly. She was the main person that I thought objectively is going to help her position. She had a real command of the issues. Vivek, I think he's the most polarizing person in Wisconsin or national GOP politics. But ultimately, look, I mean, I don't know how anyone makes up serious ground on the front runner, Donald Trump.
Yep.
For good, bad, or indifferent. That's a sizable gap. And I just don't know who made a dent and how their plan is.
Absolutely. Well, we will still see. We'll do it again in a month. Well, we will also do it again in a month. We'll get you back before I leave for maternity leave to talk about budget surplus. But CJ Safer, always a pleasure to have you here. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. Happy Friday.
You too. Budget surplus.
Your home for local news, weather, and sports across the airwaves and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Learning more about the white suspect who shot 3 black people in a Dollar General in Jacksonville, Florida. Our Christiane Benavides on what police say was a racially motivated attack.
Investigators said the gunman, 21-year-old Ryan Palmetter, obtained the weapons legally and issued racist statements before the shooting. Photos also show his weapons covered in Nazi symbols.
Is a cool down coming? Meteorologist David Parkinson.
The end of the heat is near, particularly for the south, courtesy in part of Idalia, which will bust up some of the air mass there as well.
The tropical storm's expected to become a hurricane, making landfall Wednesday on the west coast of Florida. A presidential picture may have helped bring in a lot of money.
Since former President Trump's booking photo was released, his campaign claims it's raised over $7 million and close to $20 million in the last 3 weeks.
That's CBS's Nicole D'Antonio. CBS News Brief. I'm Stacey Lynn.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west-northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898, but 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude. Did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
My name is Teresa Barber. I was in the United States Navy, and I served overseas in the Middle East and Africa. Early on in my career, I had a commander that taught our suicide prevention training, and the very next day, he took his own life. 90% of suicide attempts involving a gun are fatal. My way of continuing my service is to help protect my community by being a responsible gun owner and by storing firearms safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
For over a century, AM radio has evolved to meet the needs of our community. More than 80 million listeners depend on AM radio each month. It's also the backbone of the emergency alert system, keeping us safe in dangerous times. A new bill in Congress would ensure this free, reliable service remains in cars. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress to support the AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
Confidence is a preference for the habitual voyeur of what is known as... A morning suit can be avoided if you take a route straight through what is known as... John Scott Brewer's group, he gets intimidated by the dirty pigeons.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. Greg Bach is on the board. And we thought we were going to have a guest today to talk about the first ever fully accessible playground that's broke ground in Wauwatosa, Damian Buckman. But... we may have crossed wires, and so if we don't have him, if he doesn't join today, we will get that rescheduled, certainly. Oh, you looked like you wanted to say something, Greg.
Hello.
Hi. as far as some background on that, 5 years ago, Wauwatosa, Damian Buckman, noticed that although there was playgrounds and with some inclusive features in Milwaukee, there wasn't a park that was fully inclusive and universally accessible. So we were really excited to talk to him about it, but it looks like maybe we will have to reschedule. And so for a minute, I guess, until we figure out if we could buy a little bit more time. Greg, what are you doing this weekend?
Oh, I'm working. I'm always working, my friend. Whether it's at the club, the Laughing Tap, which if you are watching the live stream, which you can right now, you'll see I'm wearing a Laughing Tap t-shirt. Like I said before, we got great show tonight, the local Laugh Showcase, which is happening at 7:30. Tickets are available, laughingtap.com. And then tomorrow, Matt Bronger, very special guest, very special show. But yeah, basically working. And then Sunday, I'm going to probably be mowing my lawn in the evening because that's when it's got
to
happen.
Is it going to be hot again? Or are you just doing it because that's when you have time to do it?
That's when I have time to do it. I was going to do it yesterday, and I was like, I'm not dying. And then it started to rain. I'm like, well, okay, apparently the universe wants my lawn to grow wild this season because it is. It's really crazy. What about you? Are you going to be relaxing at all?
Well, I mean, maybe. I have a baby shower tomorrow.
Ooh.
My baby shower. Well, a baby shower being thrown for me tomorrow, so that will be fun. And besides that, I think it might be Mike's first day out because he has not been out since... he has not been out since last week when he had his back surgery. But for those who are wondering, he is recovering well. I mean, he's still definitely just laying on the couch, but he is. Yeah, each day gets a little bit better and a little less pain, and all the other things that come along with surgery are starting to be better. But the man wants a fish fry, so it sounds like we are potentially going to we're going to go out tonight. I think we're going to go to Kegels and or Kegels, and we are going to be able to get him a fish fry. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, Damien might be joining right now. Right. Damien, can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Excellent.
There we go. We got it.
Boy, my apologies.
No problem. You just lose, it's Friday. Things happen.
It's Friday, indeed.
It is Friday. I like that. I like that. Now, because I didn't get a chance.
It's like a Monday right now, but it is Friday nonetheless.
Nonetheless, is it Buchman or Buchman?
It's actually Buchman, which is fine. No one ever gets it right since I was in elementary school.
That is funny because as someone whose last name if they ever read it, thinks it's Bray. I totally feel you, man, because it's Bry.
Yeah. There you go. Well, it's nice to meet you, Kristen Bry.
Nice to meet you as well, Damien Buchman. So we were just talking. We were buying a little time, but I'm so excited when I read about this. I think the first time I read about the park is in the WPR article. But okay. We were just saying, so this is like 5 years in progress.
It is at least in my brain. It's been 5 years in the making. Publicly, it's been 3-4 years, and by the time we're done, as far as the community knows, it'll have been 5 years before this first Universal Park was developed and made real.
So tell us more about, so we were kind of saying before, you noticed the lack of, while there were some parks that had accessible features, there was no fully accessible park. And so what is the Moss Universal Park in Wauwatosa gonna look like when it's all done?
Yeah, so it's, that it's exactly what it says. It's a universal park, which means the whole park, the entirety of its 18 acres are for everybody, physically disabled, intellectually disabled, not disabled at all, elderly, young, middle-aged like myself, something for everybody. And so what we always say is what we often see is we'll see it like an inclusive playground, right? And those inclusive playgrounds, which are great, don't get me wrong, we applaud everybody who's taken that first step. They're fantastic, but they stop at the playground, and every playground is built in a park. So our argument has been, why are we limiting people from leaving the playground? Why are we saying this is your only space? And one of the most important things that I think we've all really glossed over and forgotten is, what about the dad with a disability who wants to play with their kids? And every parent, at least when I ask them, what's your most important job? At least what I say all the time, and they usually agree, is to keep my kids safe, right? To keep them protected. Yeah. And if I can't get to them if they're injured on the top of the playground, or if they escape the inclusive playground into the park and I can't get to them in the woods, I can't keep them safe. So now my able-bodied kids aren't coming with me to the park until their able-bodied mom, or caretaker or someone else is available so we can all go.
So, and that is, this is the thing that I always is like when it comes to able-bodied, being disabled, like different limitations, like just the things that as an able-bodied person, you don't think about. Because right. I was thinking about it even when I read about this as the point from a kid's perspective of what can they play on, what can they not. And I hadn't even thought about it as a parent of being able to like not only just keep eyes, but like you see your kid at the top, they're about to go down the slide and something happens. You're not getting up there.
That's right.
And so, it broke ground last month, but what does it take? Have you built a park before? Like what, how did you, like where, when you kind of looked around the landscape, you're like, well, we need this. Where does one even start to get the ball rolling?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I actually found myself, got connected to a company called Game Time. They built a playground in Hart Park in Wauwatosa that was accessible. And I was ready to go down there. This was like 2012. I had my son strapped to me. You know, sometimes I use a wheelchair for long distance and mostly I'm ambulatory. So, you know, I brought my little baby son down with my wheelchair, expecting not to really be able to execute and use this playground. Turned out I could get all the way to the top. I was really impressed, immediately built a relationship with Game Time. Fast forward 6-7 years later, and I said to them, it's time to build a universal park. Gave them a call. They spoke my language. They started talking about inclusivity is not just about the child with a disability, but what about grandparents? What about parents? What about everybody who wants to play? You know, we say everybody should be able to play from K to grade, kindergarten to senior. If the park is your jam when you're 8, the park should still be able to continue to be your jam in your 80s and you can play with your grandkids, right? And so that's really where it came from for me, was looking at this thing, also playing wheelchair basketball on a team with my teammates, some of whom are all, you know, full-time wheelchair users and have started to grow families. And I'm like, they deserve to play with their kids like I deserve to play with my kids. And their kids deserve to play with them. They should be able to look back and say, hey, Dad, there you are. Not look down and say, wish you could be playing with me, Dad.
Yeah.
But you can't. You know, so it's all of those experiences through those years that said, Game Time does inclusion the best. I experienced it in 2012. They're speaking my same language. It's time to elevate what they've been doing for the last 100 years and move into the 21st century.
That's so cool. And so, all right. So we're on live stream right now. So some people who are watching can see us, but most people listening are exactly listening. So how do you paint the picture of like, what does a universally accessible park look like? Like what should people wrap their head around? Like when you look at a playground, what are the features that are different than a traditional playground?
Well, let's talk about a couple of those. So it's not just the playground, right? So let me give everybody that visual. 18-acre park from baseball fields to forestry. We're building the first ever universal baseball field. Never been designed before. It's going to work for wheelchair softball, wheelchair baseball, wheelchair lacrosse, wheelchair football, Miracle League baseball. It will work for the typical standing player to be able to use a larger field than what we're familiar with Miracle League. That will lead into a fully inclusive, what we call universal clubhouse. It'll have therapy pockets. It'll have fitness pockets, play pockets. It'll have the most inclusive playground you've ever seen. But then we've actually created the first ever wheelchair slide is going to be
here. So I read that. What does that look like?
We're close to what it looks like. It looks like two different models. We've tested it with marbles and things to see how it will roll and how it will play. We're actually in that space of calling it a wheelchair shoot. But what I challenged Game Time on was kids who are wheelchair users or people who are ambulatory on crutches, you know, or with a walker, et cetera, they go up and down ramps all day long every day.
Yeah.
Perception is reality, right? If you make the ramp look like a slide, especially to the kid, it's a slide. Like, let's just start there with that concept. And they were like, oh, that's a great idea. Yes. And so we've created this, what we're calling a wheelchair chute, which will kind of have a down, a slow, a down again, and maybe be buried into the ground a little bit to slow you down at the end. One of the things I said to them is the number one cause of broken arms for kids are monkey bars.
Oh, but
we don't stop making monkey bars. So like give these kids and their families the decision to determine to be risky and adventurous or not. Let them make those same choices. So wheelchair slide it is.
There
right?
you go.
Let's get him up to 8 feet. Let's get him up to 12 feet, just like we do the other kids. Let's not just give him 2 to 4 feet off the ground. Let's get outside of the box and give them the opportunity to choose adventure and danger, just like their able-bodied peers do. So then that's the playground. Now let's bounce into the fact that we have a special needs only playground is what we're calling it right now. You know, it's not a great name. I'm going to come up with something better. Yeah. But the concept there was we actually had parents tell us with kids with pretty severe disabilities, we don't go to inclusive playgrounds. I was like, whoa, what do you mean you don't go to inclusive playgrounds? They're like, well, they're usually the newest. People think they're the coolest. And so they become overused and it's too dangerous for my kid to go to.
Oh, interesting.
And I was like, whoa, we got to fix that. So we're creating that space, a space that where just play is different, how it's managed is different, how it's supervised is different, and give an opportunity. You know, playgrounds are designed with like a 2 to 5 mentality and a 7 to 12 mentality. So 2 to 5 is lower ground elements. So this is what I keep saying to people. My kids are all 3 able-bodied, rambunctious, crazy boys, super adventurous. Okay. My oldest is going to do a flip off the top of the slide, you know, a double backflip kind of thing. That's okay.
That. Boy this energy. Area,
yeah. This area wouldn't even entertain them, right? So they won't even go there anyway because it's not something that's going to keep their entertainment and desire for adventure in play. So the play is naturally going to become a little bit more sedated, if you will. So that's that area. Now we're adding also family fitness area, think like ninja course. And then you get into the forestry. And what we've said is everybody deserves to hug a tree. We can't talk about how great the trees are. And if you can't get to the trees don't exist. So there'll be pathways throughout the entirety of the acreage of the forestry of the park, which is about 2/3 of the 18 acres in the park. And then finally, I'll close that vision for everybody with there's a great space we call Mental Health Valley or Sensory Escape.
Ooh.
By the time you get down into this little downhill slope on Wisconsin Avenue where there's a lot of traffic, you can hear all the cars, all the outside noise goes away and all you hear are the birds. It's actually beautiful.
So, which is saying something because Tosa is not a rural area.
Right. Right. So we're really, I mean, that's what the Milwaukee County Parks love, right? They love their nature. They love their historic trees, you know, in this concrete jungle, and as they should. But again, if you can't get to those trees, it means nothing to me, right? So giving that access into that nature is super important. We already know from studies that parks and nature are good for mental health. But we're just making sure everybody has access to all.
Absolutely. Damien, since we got a late start, can you stick around through the break and answer a couple more questions on the other side? Great.
Yeah.
Our guest, perfect. Our guest is Damien Bookman, who is the founder and executive director of the Ability Center and is also the spearheaded brainchild behind the new Moss Universal Park in Wauwatosa. He'll still be with us on the other side of the break. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west-northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
It's summertime in Wisconsin, and whatever the weather, it will impact you and your plans.
Should I water the garden? Will our event be rained out? Count on your local Civic Media radio station for in-depth details and the most up-to-date forecast.
Temperatures are rising into the mid and upper 70s under sunny skies.
It's your weather and more for your part of Wisconsin.
On your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, mostly clear, lows around 58. Slight chance of an afternoon storm on Monday, otherwise mostly sunny, 82. And slight chance of a storm Monday night with a low near 60. Tuesday, sunshine, 77. Wednesday, sunny with a high around 79.
Right now, it's 55.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
Kristen Bry, we got Greg Bach on the board, and we are talking to Damian Bookman, who is the founder and executive director of the Ability Center, and also the man behind Moss Universal Park in Wauwatosa, which is going to be the first universally accessible park in Wisconsin, but also maybe the nation?
Hands down the nation. Never even been thought of before. Again, working with Game Time, 100-year-old company, develops 2,000 parks a year, has never seen a fully universally inclusive park.
So this is really exciting because it's potentially the blueprint that could be replicated across state, across country, as far as like what this could look like and how it's adopted.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Kristen, that's our goal. That's our focus. So Game Time and I are thinking big because people with disabilities and communities of all kinds of abilities deserve it. And so we're thinking, how do we socialize and create a plan for 35 universal parks in 35 markets by the 35th anniversary of the ADA? That's in 2 years.
Wow.
Doesn't mean we'll build 35. It means what's our plan to get there? What's our plan to work with communities to create more? So we fully are committed to and expecting that Wisconsin is going to lead the way for what universal inclusion looks like. This will be the template, as you said, and how do we deliver that across the country?
And one of the things, and I would be interested to know of how much of this is part of it or if it's a positive externality. But I was reading, you probably don't know because you're on the StreamYard, but I'm 8 months pregnant. And so I get lots of advertising too of things to get for baby.
Yeah.
And most recently I saw something as far as like books, like children's books that also introduce disability to your able-bodied children, right? So it's like I was raised, I have an uncle with Down syndrome, I have cousins who are in wheelchairs. So it's like the access to that, when you're a child and you have people in your life, there's just a layer of understanding, empathy, but if you don't, you don't. And so is there also an ability, like part of this is an opportunity for children to be at a playground or to be at a park with a variety of like a diverse group of adults and kids? Is like, is that also part of this? Is what it opens up for all kids?
Absolutely, Kristen. And abilities, and not just kids, adults and grandparents in all ages, everybody. I mean, a community is built of all abilities. And there's something that we say all the time, which we all simply belong to one demographic, and we call that TAPS, which stands for temporarily able-bodied.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's disease, which I learned at 13 years old when I was diagnosed with childhood cancer, or it's accident or the aging process, none of us can escape the need for greater access in our future.
Totally.
We're going to need it. And what's beautiful about this is it's not just a playground in a random location. It's an 18-acre park that is also, again, baseball fields, typical softball field, typical baseball field next to the universal field. That is our vision. That is our mission. It always has been for people to play together. So now I can really see what people's abilities are. I can look at somebody and say, well, holy crap, they can crack a home run in a wheelchair. and I can crack a home run standing up, like, what's the difference?
Yeah.
Let me hop in a wheelchair, try on a different pair of shoes, as we say, and see if I can do that. Now we can just recognize what people's abilities are, what their functional capacities are, instead of their disabilities. And listen, I don't know what the extra gene is in Down syndrome, but it's full of love.
Oh, and if I can get hugs
all along, if I can get those hugs and I can bring those to people, I'm in.
Right.
I'm in. I remember being at Children's Hospital and there to get an x-ray, and there was a teenage boy with Down syndrome who came and just gave me this huge hug. And his mom said, I'm so sorry. He doesn't even understand his own strength. And I was like, don't ever apologize for your child. That's the best x-ray visit in the waiting room I've ever had in my 20 years here at Children's Hospital.
That is the truth. I've been around a fair amount of people with Down syndrome in my life, and they are just...
It's like an extra love.
Oh, my gosh.
It?
Yes.
It's
yes.
Amazing.
It's amazing. So quickly, I will also, because we have referenced, you're the executive director and founder of the Ability Center. We've talked about Game Time, but what is the Ability Center?
Yeah, so I started this organization and this charity back in 2008. Again, I survived childhood cancer in both of my legs when I was 13 and 14. To date, really the only known survivor of my diagnosis, still standing on my own 2 feet. Nobody expected me to see my 16th birthday, yet alone I'm 45 now and celebrated 30 years of survivorship. And actually next month, I'm going to have my 29th knee replacement and revision. So I've grown up. I've grown up expecting to be a bilateral above knee amputee by now. And so that's been the motivation for my honoring my survivorship to give back. And what I found is that what we do often with people with disabilities is it's always like, as I put in air quotes, disability hour. Like, this is the time that we've set aside for you to bring your individual with a disability to do the thing. It's never like, how are we playing together? And why aren't we playing at the same time in the same locations whenever it is that you're open versus the hour you're giving us? And so everything that we do attempts to create that. And that's what the beauty is in a universal park. You know, people have asked us, like, are people going to have to pay an admission to get in here? I'm like, no, this is just going to be a community park as it's been. But now it's going to work for everybody. And if it's noon on Friday and I want to go play in the park, you can come play in the park. Yeah. Just like everybody else. Like, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to create the Ability Center to make Greater Milwaukee the most universally inclusive recreation destination in the world. That's our goal.
Well, this is awesome. This is a great way to end a Friday show, is talking about this and what you guys are doing with the Moss Universal Park in Wauwatosa. We only got like about a minute left before we got to let you go. So what is the timeline? When can people expect this to be something that they can go enjoy?
Great question. Look, we're 50% of the way to our fundraising goal already. Thanks to Moss and other donors, we've raised almost $5 million already. We got about another $5 million to go. But that allows us to complete phase one. So phase one is going to be open by fall of next year. We actually start construction in March of 2024. Phase two will open in 2025, primarily because we have to biofeed the trees and get the forestry ready to be under construction. But again, we're just giving access to that forestry. It's not like we're cutting down trees and taking things away. Mm-hmm. We're just putting in paths and some play pockets and fitness pockets throughout to engage people into the woods. So that'll open in 25.
All right. Well, if people are motivated to donate, can they do that?
Well, I sure hope they would. You can go.
Where should they go?
You can actually go to universalpark.org. We've got that as a whole. So
easy.
It is universalpark.org. Go check it out. You'll be updated on information. You'll see what's going on. You'll check out the blueprints. And if you're engaged, you know, and inspired to donate or to become a fundraiser, it's all there for you.
Wonderful. And we will put all of that in our show notes for today. Damian Bookman, thank you so much for joining us. This was such an uplifting way to end the week.
Kristen, happy Friday.
Friday. All right. Well, thank you to everyone who texted and called in for today's show. Thank you to our guests, Damian Bookman, CJ Safer, and William Walter. Have a great weekend, and we will do this all over again on Monday.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west-northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898, but 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap,
WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire,
and streaming everywhere.